Welcome, everyone who's listening in today. And we hope that you have your magazines or that you are watching on your mobile site or whatever it is, because we're going to talk about something that would be nice to see pictures of. We're going to talk about our oceans. And we have people with us in the class today that love doing things under the water and looking at the oceans. I'm one of them. And who else?
Hello, everyone. This is Josh, and Doris is absolutely right. I love being in and under the water, and I love experiencing all the beauties of the ocean.
And what about you?
I also love the ocean. Hi, everyone. I'm Linda C. I'm glad to be here.
And we all love the ocean. You know, some people only know about the land and how beautiful the trees and the plants are. And they are. But there's another whole world under the ocean. If you only see the top of it, oh, you don't even know all the beautiful things there. Isn't that right?
That is very true. And literally, it takes your breath away. You can almost not breathe when you see all the wonderful things that are under the water.
You know, I think after listening to this program, a lot of our people listening are going to sign up for scuba diving classes, don't you think?
I hope so. I think scuba diving is a wonderful way to really get to know all of the beautiful things this Earth has to offer.
Snorkeling's not bad, but, you know, it's nice to be right down there with the things, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, you can see so much more when you're down under the ocean.
So that's why you're with me today as panelists as we talk about this lesson, and it's on page 28. And Linda, what is the title that we're going to be talking about today?
Treasuring Our Oceans.
Treasuring means that we think how important they are, a national treasure to our countries and to the whole world. And what does it say under the subtitle?
Here it says, protecting endangered marine life and tracking pollution in our seas.
Now, those two sections there, protecting and tracking, do they have any connection?
I think they do. I think protecting endangered marine life is also connected to tracking pollution, because pollution has a large effect on the health of everyone, but especially marine life.
I think if we've read up to date on things, we're going to find out there's so much plastic in the ocean, and it's killing so much of the marine life. Isn't that true?
Yeah, it's really unfortunate that there's so much garbage in the ocean.
So when we try to protect our marine life, we try to protect ourselves. Sometimes people are afraid of sharks and things like that. But they're more afraid of us sometimes because
we're... Yeah, I think we do more damage.
We do more damage than the sharks
than they could ever do.
That's right. And so we have to find out how we can protect this. And let's find out if it's important or not. What do the scientists and fishermen, what are they doing nowadays? What does it say?
Well, they say here that scientists and fishermen are fighting to save the leatherback turtles.
Well, I hope they're fighting to save all the turtles. Now, leatherback turtles are very distinctive. We can see some photos of them here. They look like they have leather on them. But here in Asia, we have a lot of hawksbill turtles, and they're very common. Have you ever seen hawksbill turtles?
I have. I've been fortunate enough to go both snorkeling and diving off the coast of southern Taiwan and seen many, many turtles. It was an amazing experience.
And they're so beautiful. What about you? Have you seen turtles?
Yeah, I've also seen them here in Taiwan, and they're so cute.
Well, they are. You know, you never think of turtles as being cute. You think of dogs and cats as being cute. But turtles have a real personality in the water. They act differently when we're on the shore, don't they?
They do. They actually are more majestic in the water. So it's beautiful just to
look at them. Well, and they're playful, too. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been in different places in Malaysia and all, and the turtles will come and swim right around you and under you, and sometimes they'll show off and dive up in front of you and then look back and see if you're there. I mean, they're kind of playful in the water, aren't they?
Yeah, you can interact with them.
You can interact with them. You never thought about that when you see them on the ground.
That's true.
You think, oh, they're just too slow.
Yeah.
But they're not slow in the water.
No,
they are fast, aren't they? So we want to keep turtles in the world, and we're going to find out there is a problem, and the scientists and some of the fishermen are trying to save them. So let's read page 28 first, then we can talk a little bit more about the subjects. Are you ready?
Yes. Yes.
Treasuring Our Oceans. Protecting endangered marine life and tracking pollution in our seas. Scientists and fishermen fight to save leatherback turtles. Despite strict protections off the West Coast, leatherback turtles are in danger in other parts of the Pacific, scientists and fishermen said at a conference called to celebrate California's official marine reptile. With populations down by more than 90% since the 1980s, the animals are ranked as one of 8 marine species at greatest risk of extinction, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's NOAA, National Marine Fisheries Service. Fishermen and researchers say U.S. fishing limits designed to keep leatherbacks from getting caught in nets may unintentionally lead to more ensnarement in countries where rules are looser. For the globally roaming species, it will take more than one country's efforts to stave off extinction.
Well, this certainly does sound like it's a very important issue right now, doesn't it?
It's certainly a very important issue.
Mm-hmm. Because they do have some very strict protections in the United States on the West Coast about these leatherback turtles. But in other places, they don't have these restrictions, and that makes a problem, doesn't
right.
it?
Right. So the leatherback turtles are in danger. They're at risk in other parts of the world, specifically in the Pacific.
So these scientists in other areas, they've called this conference, and they said, well, let's celebrate, you know, California's official marine reptile. I never think of turtles as being a reptile. A reptile sounds like a snake to me.
Well, yeah, reptiles do include snakes, but they're cold-blooded and they lay eggs.
They lay eggs, so that makes them. But some other animals in the sea lay eggs too, don't they?
Are they mammals do not lay eggs.
No, mammals by definition do not.
Well, there's so many birds, animals.
Yeah. Yeah.
Birds do lay eggs, but they're not cold-blooded.
They're not cold-blooded. How do you know if they're cold-blooded or not?
So a cold-blooded is does not have a metabolism that allows them to regulate their own body heat. So they depend upon the surrounding environment in order to help keep them warm or cold. So if a reptile is too warm, it needs to move out of the sun. And if it's too cold, it needs to move into the sun.
But, you know, sometimes I've heard people to call somebody who's very unfeeling and they're not nice to people, and they say, you're so cold-blooded, because they're not warm-hearted. So we use warm and cold a lot in different ways, don't we?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you're cold-blooded, that means you don't care about other people. But I don't think that's true of the animals.
Well, I don't think anyone would really call a turtle a cold-blooded reptile in the same way of being like uncaring and unfeeling unsympathetic.
So don't get the feeling that. But anyway, it says that their populations are down, and I knew that they were endangered, but I didn't know how endangered they are. What does it tell us here?
Right. They are ranked as one of the 8 marine species that are at greatest risk of extinction.
Well, and they're down more than 90% since the 1980s. There's only 10% left. That's hardly any, isn't it?
Yeah, their populations have been greatly reduced.
That's really very frightening, I would say. And it says here that they are in risk of extinction. Now, when something becomes extinct, what happens?
So when something becomes extinct, it means it no longer exists anywhere on this earth.
Can you imagine no more turtles? And they talk about other animals. They say elephants are almost extinct.
Right, there's a possibility.
And how could you imagine having a world without elephants?
Right.
Isn't it terrible that we're destroying so much of this beautiful life?
It is terrible, and that's part of the reason why people are so concerned about the leatherbacks. So the leatherbacks are, of all the sea turtles, they're unique because they have a soft back as opposed to a hard shell, and they're one of the largest marine reptiles. And so they get really big. They're beautiful creatures. They have a distribution, or the area that they live in, all around the globe. So not just in any one particular ocean, but they've already pretty much disappeared from certain areas of the planet.
That is sad, isn't it?
It is very sad. We don't want to see them go extinct.
So you say, well, I don't really care about turtles, but if we get rid of some of these species, our whole system is upset. For instance, if you get rid of the sharks, there's nobody to clean up the garbage because they're the garbage collectors in the ocean. And you kill all the sharks and there's going to be garbage. So you have to realize there's a balance in nature, right?
There is a balance in nature, and it may sound very sad, but one of the balances in nature where leatherbacks are very important is that they used to be very numerous. There used to be many, many leatherbacks around the planet. So in all of the seas, warm water, cold water, everywhere. These were large, large turtles. And at one point, when they would reach their natural death, then they would become very important food for lots of microorganisms in the ocean.
Right.
And if you reduce the amount of microorganisms in the ocean, you affect the basic building blocks of health of everything in the ocean.
See, there is a balance here of nature, isn't there?
There is.
So the fishermen and the researchers say that the U.S. fishing limits, they have this designed to keep them from getting caught in the nets, and that's good, but they hope that's going to keep them. But what happens is, without having that intention, it leads to more ensnarement, which means catching it. Why? How would that happen? Because they get away from there and they go someplace else and they get caught.
That is exactly how it happens. So, like, say, for example, there are areas in California where the leatherbacks go to lay their eggs, but they only do that at certain times of year, and then they go many other places in colder waters or in the other areas of the ocean. And if the swordfish or the people who are catching swordfish close to the Americas are providing the fish that people want to eat or other things, that they're doing a good job of trying not to catch turtles at the same time. But if you tell the fishermen that they can't catch as many fish, then people are still going to buy fish, and they'll buy it from areas where people don't have the same kind of regulations and do catch more turtles by accident.
So that's what's happening, which is too bad, because it's going to take more than one company to do something that we say stave off. To stave off is a good expression to know what it means.
It means to prevent at least for a short time or lessen the likelihood of the leatherback turtles going extinct.
Right. It might hold back for a little while, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to find out a little bit more about this. And you'll notice here that we see the turtles on the sand. And I think a lot of you know this. Maybe you don't know it. But when the turtle is, the eggs are laid on shore. And when the turtle hatches, then this turtle will go across the sand and go into the ocean. And it makes a mark on the shell. Under the shell, so that when the turtles come back, they come back to that same place, they can go by that.
Oh.
It's very important. So for a while, they found in places in Malaysia that some of the tourists were picking up these little turtles and taking them out to the ocean, and they were harming him because they didn't get that mark on there.
Mm-hmm.
And so they made a law that you cannot have any tourists near where these turtles are hatching because they were hindering them.
Right.
Because they have to go across the sand and make that mark on their shell, and they can go away for a long time, but they can always come back there.
Right.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it is very interesting. And there seems to be more of an awareness in the States, at least in Florida, on the beaches where turtles would lay eggs. There was a barrier placed around the nest, and people know not to disturb the nest, and there are also signs that say not to disturb the turtles when they hatch because they need to make their way to the ocean.
Well, another thing is some people like to watch that process, and so they would turn their flashlights on.
Yeah.
And when they turn the flashlight on, the turtle goes towards the light, and then they can't find the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't like tourists around where the turtles hatch.
Yeah. Or even car lights and traffic nearby.
That's
that will
true.
Attract the turtles, and so they'll head in that direction instead of going to the ocean.
Right. So it's very important to understand more about the life in the sea. Now, the next part we're going to talk about is that it might have an adverse effect, and the adverse effect means a bad effect on the swordfish industry. Now, how would this industry have anything to do with turtles? Let's read about it.
Having an adverse effect on swordfish industry. U.S. federal rules limit fishing methods and gear, require observers on fishing boats to report any leatherbacks snared in fishing nets, and set seasonal closures on drift gill net fishing, which is used to catch swordfish, but can also trap turtles and other animals. As the U.S. has tightened protections for the turtles, however, access to locally caught swordfish has dropped. In its place on menus and at fish markets is imported frozen swordfish, caught in parts of the world without such fishing restrictions. That's leading to a call among fishermen and conservationists alike to revive the U.S. swordfish industry.
You know, a lot of people like fish, all kinds of fish, and it's a good food for us to eat, but we don't realize all the things involved here. And could you explain this a little bit more to us, Sir Joshua?
Sure. So there are many different ways to catch fish. And here they're talking about having an adverse effect on the swordfish industry, so that there are rules that limit fishing methods and gear for different types of fish at different types of year.
Well, what is this gill net fishing? What does that do?
So the first one we talk about here is leatherbacks snared in fishing nets, and they close the use of gill netting at certain types of year. So a gill net is a net that's designed to catch a certain species of fish. It's a net that has a space that is big enough just to fit behind the head of a fish and catch it by the gills. And you will use different spaces in order to, or different sizes, in order to catch different species. And most gill nets have a series of floats on the top of the net and a series of weights on the bottom of the net. And depending on how they use the floats and the weights, they can make the nets sit at different elevations in the water in order to get the best chance of catching the types of species that they're looking for.
You know, some of that sounds kind of cruel in a way, because if you like to go in the water with the fish and you see everybody trying to catch them, you say, hurry up and get away, don't let them catch you.
Right.
You ever feel like that?
Yeah.
don't get away, don't let them catch you, because I know we need to catch fish sometimes. But the way they use it, it not just traps the fish, but it traps the turtles and other animals, even dolphins that all get caught in the nets.
Right, which is really sad, because
it is sad.
I love dolphins.
I know, and you don't want them to get caught in these nets. And so it's kind of hard to know what to do about it. Now, they are tightening the protections for turtles, but it says locally caught swordfish have dropped because of that. So that means that we have to import frozen swordfish. So what are they trying to do now?
So the argument here is that because they're not catching as many swordfish in the waters off the United States, but there's still a demand to eat swordfish because it's considered a very good fish steak by many people, that instead they're getting the swordfish from other locations where the regulations in order to make sure that they're not accidentally catching turtles are very relaxed.
You know, it's very hard to regulate things in the ocean. I think about the salmon, because being from Seattle, we have a lot of salmon there, and some comes from Alaska, and the salmon come from every place. And we have certain regulations that you can't catch them at a certain time when they're, you know, having babies and so forth.
Sure.
So,
mm-hmm.
But still, the salmon go out to sea, and we say don't catch them, but they get off the coast of Hawaii or Japan or something, and they catch them. We can't catch them, but you can't tell the fish don't go there.
Right.
We should have little warning signs in the ocean to the salmon. Don't go there.
Don't turn left.
And hope that they listen.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the problem, is you can't regulate what's under the ocean. So you say, I'm not going to catch them, but somebody else does.
Sure.
And you know, that's what happens to the turtles, because I know in Sipadan, which is a turtle preserve, and they try to save the turtles, and that is in Malaysia. But Indonesia is right on the bottom part of that. And so the turtles, they go out into the water in Malaysia, and as soon as they get to the line where it's Indonesia, the fishermen's boats are there and catch them.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So here they are, they're saving them here, but they swim a little too far away, and they get caught.
Mm-hmm.
How can you tell those turtles not to go there?
That is a problem, and that's why these problems really need more than one solution in more than one place.
So they're trying to do something to help the swordfish industry, but still not catch the turtles. it's not easy for the people to decide how to do this, is it?
It is not easy to decide. And one of the things that is difficult is that for some of the more successful methods of catching these fish that are very important commercially, tend to also be methods that are very dangerous for protected species. So, for example, the netting, if you catch an animal like a dolphin or a whale or a turtle, mm-hmm. they all have to breathe. So if they can't go up into the air, that they will die. Where if you get a different type of fish that you don't want, chances are that as long as they haven't damaged themselves too badly in the net, when you bring the net out of the water, you can take the fish you don't want and put them back in the ocean, and they'll swim away to live again another day. When you are using long lines, which are long, drawn-out lines that have hooks on them,
mm-hmm.
Many times the bait that you use in order to catch the fish that you want is bait that will also be attractive to turtles and dolphins and other fish that you don't want to catch, but sometimes they get damaged so badly that they can't be released. So it is a very difficult problem.
It is, really. So we'll have to figure out what they're going to do about this. Now, some fishermen have some ideas about it. Let's read the rest of page 29 and find out what they're trying to do.
Some fishermen call for relaxing U.S. fishing restrictions, arguing that they could produce locally caught swordfish with less risk to turtles than imported fish. Real-time monitoring of turtle movements could help fishermen steer clear of the reptiles while maximizing the swordfish catch, they say. Others are testing new gear that could help catch swordfish at times and depths that pose little risk to leatherbacks. And regulators are demanding that fish importers prove they're safeguarding turtles. Change that can make a difference now. Countries that export fish into our country will have 5 years to meet our standards for protecting leatherbacks, said Tina Fey, a fishery biologist for NOAA. It's a huge game changer.
So people that are in the business of catching swordfish, they're trying to think of ways to get it back in the United States. And they said, well, we could just find out when the turtles are going to be around in that area, and they're going to other areas, and we could do it that way. It might minimize, make it smaller, the fact that they would get caught. But do you think that's kind of easy to work, huh?
Well, it's a little bit complicated.
Mm, it is.
It requires that they're very good about radio tagging turtles,
mm-hmm.
so that they have very accurate ideas of when the turtle populations are going to be in what areas. And that the fisheries themselves, so the fishermen, also have the technology in order to be able to have that real-time data so they can stay away from those areas while still being able to look for their swordfish or other types of species that they're catching for commercial processing.
I'm sure some fishermen would just say, well, we don't care. I mean, they want to get the swordfish and, you know.
Yeah, and this equipment costs money, not be willing to pay for that.
Yeah.
And if you really have to tag all of the turtles, then first, you have to find them and do that
right.
in order to monitor and track them.
Well, that's true, yeah. And sometimes you say, well, the turtles don't go this deep and the swordfish deeper, but it's not always certain that works. So these things demand that fish importers have to prove that they are taking care of not catching. They are safeguarding the turtles. They have to prove that. And some of them probably don't even want to.
Yeah, that might not be in their interest to do that.
Yeah. So who cares, But we care if there's not very many left. So the world has to care a little bit. So if we make these changes, we have to do something that's going to make a difference now.
Right. So countries that export fish into the United States will have 5 years to meet standards for protecting leatherbacks. So this is someone who is a fishery biologist, Tina Fey. She works for NOAA, the North Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And they're saying here that they are now giving people who export swordfish into the United States about 5 years to come up with methods to prove that they are also following regulations or Now, what they don't say here, but what I'm guessing is that either they won't be allowed to export the fish, or there will be some sort of penalty, fine or tax.
Yeah, but just think about 5 years. If there's only 10% left the turtles, there might not be that many left. That's too long.
Very
Give them 1 year.
But it might be difficult to prove. I mean, are they going to show a document? Those documents could be forged.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, how do you know that they really did that? That's true. And so they give them this period of time. But it is a huge game changer for the fishermen, really, isn't it?
It is. Yes, it is.
What is a game changer?
So a game changer is something that really affects or dramatically changes something. So it could
be you do
anything.
Something.
Yeah, when you do something. So it could be not so often do we talk about it while we're playing a game, but we could say that something is a game changer, like if somebody gets injured and is no longer able to play.
They make more rules.
Exactly, right? But that really affects the outcome of the game.
Mm-hmm. So this would be different if we go to all of this. You can't do this fish if you don't do that. And it's kind of making it a little bit of trouble. But still, when you think that these turtles might become extinct, maybe it's necessary. What do you think?
Yeah, sometimes you have to force people to do things. So
usually
by making the fishermen or the exporters of the swordfish prove that they're protecting sea turtles, that's going to make a difference.
Well, you could talk about this with your friends and say what they think about it, because we're going to talk a little bit more about one of the biggest problems in the ocean when you come back tomorrow, and think about it a little bit. Maybe you've never thought about the ocean when you look at the water, but think about it now and come back tomorrow and we'll talk about it again. See you then.
Goodbye.